I'm David Cook from Intel, and I do software for threading and distributed computing.
And I'm Steve Pawlowski from Intel. I run our architecture and planning organization for the Digital Enterprise Group, and very happy to be here with David because everything I know about computer architecture I learned from him.
Did you go to U of I?
No, but his textbook was the standard textbook that's used by most computer architecture courses, beginning graduate level computer architecture courses. So.
Let's talk about where enterprise computing is headed today. And, you know, based on the talk that you gave this morning, unimaginable things happened on the desktop, but on the enterprise side, it seems to a lot of us that don't really know a lot about enterprise computing. We know about PCs, we know about Intel's PC chips. We're can be kind of fuzzy there. I wonder if you could put that in a nutshell.
Well, enterprise computing has always scaled and scaled quite well. I mean, you see what you do on the enterprise on the desktop, but in the back there's a tremendous amount of computing farms that are available. When you go do your search on the web, there's a huge computing farm that's back supporting, doing those queries, trying to find the appropriate things that you're looking for and to display them to you in a very timely manner. The number of data centers that are, you know, and in Wall Street, when the financial institutions do options modeling and try to give the best scenarios for their traders, they have to do it on a timely manner because time is money. And so they've built tremendous amounts of infrastructure in the enterprise in order to be able to meet the needs of their customers. So it's kind of like the guys in the back room, they're doing all the work, and the guys and the people up front getting the glory. But enterprise has grown significantly in terms of its compute capability and its capacity over the last several years.
On the desktop, Intel reigns supreme. We know that in PCs. But in the enterprise world, you've got some competition out there. You've got Sun, you've got IBM. What is the nature of this business right now?
Well, it is a competitive business in terms of there are, you know, very credible OEMs out there that understand the entire enterprise solution. They've been customers of ours. We've not only developed components for them, but we've worked together to build the infrastructure in terms of the I/O infrastructure and whatnot together. And the competition is actually healthy, and it's making us better. I mean, we learn from them. We learn from their mistakes. We learn from our mistakes. They learn from our mistakes. And as a whole, it makes actually the industry more healthy and vibrant, in my opinion.
Do you think we'll ever see the day when enterprise computing takes on a commodity-like feature?
In some cases, it already has. When you look at what's happened in the last 20 years, is big proprietary mainframes have eroded into the scalable cluster arena, and Intel rack-mounted and now very Velcroed together systems of very large numbers of processors are what excite lots of internet search companies and so on. So there's lots of commoditization that's happening and has happened already.
What about performance and the notion that we're starting to see perhaps the end of Moore's Law, heat being a major problem in making faster, smaller chips, and software perhaps being the answer to continuing Moore's Law until, you know, laser-enabled chips or other kinds of chips come on the scene?
I want to address this the other half. Right. No, let David answer first.
I'll put it this way. I don't think the end of Moore's Law is exactly what we're observing. It's just that, in other words, the feature sizes keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. It's just that if you try to clock the systems very fast, it causes too much heat to be generated. So lots of smaller processors on the chip are what makes sense, which is to say shared memory parallelism. And so the challenge now for the software developers is to exploit that kind of parallelism.
How far can parallelism take the performance? Is there sort of an arc at which it no longer can achieve the same gains that you've seen over the past couple decades?
So, as Steve referred to earlier, in the enterprise, when you have transactionally oriented things, databases or payrolls or what have you that people want to access, the parallel scalability is actually very, very good because lots of transactions, gigantic amounts of data, and you can and everything is pretty much independent of everything else. So you can keep adding processors and keep putting data through them with separate requests pretty easily. It's the extreme opposite end of that is big computers solving one problem. And that's what I started working on 40 years ago. And that's what, so big computational fluid dynamics problems, big high energy physics problems, there's a long list. Now that's becoming big financial services problems and reservoir modeling, et cetera, et cetera. So those problems take a lot more work to coordinate 100 or 1,000 processors all solving the same problem at the same time.
Are the costs going down significantly?
The costs of hardware have gone through the floor. The costs of developing that stuff, here is where I have failed in my career. In other words, the software to do this stuff is still not so easy. We've generated a lot of it, but it's basically the adoption has been slow because most people didn't have to worry about it. 2 years ago, that all changed, and now ISVs, the thing we mentioned a minute ago, because of the multi-core change in exploiting Moore's Law, now you have to do it.
Hey, one thing, I'd come back to the Moore's Law comment. I think David hit the nail on the head as well. Moore's Law, when the article was published April 19th of 1965, it was titled "Cramming More Transistors into a die footprint kind of thing." Moore's Law has always been about scaling and density. It was the benefits that we got from scaling in terms of power reduction and frequency improvement were serendipitous. You know, they were part of it. But as we're getting to finer and finer densities, yeah, we won't see the frequency improvements and the power scaling that we did in the past. However, as David pointed out, now we're starting to have to look at, well, if we run them slower and cooler, but we run a lot more of them together, the aggregate performance, if assuming the algorithms can take advantage of that, will be much more significant. And that's really, and so when you say Moore's Law in terms of scaling, yeah, we see that going well into the next decade. You know, and there are challenges to doing processing like that, but we're still going to get the doubling of transistors. Now it's up to us as architects to figure out how to use them correctly and to get the biggest benefit out of them.
And the bottom line to Moore's Law is not necessarily transistors, it's the price of actually making those chips.
The first PC motherboard that Intel did, I got to work on, was back in the mid-80s. The bill of materials for that design alone, it was a 386-based, bill of materials for that design alone, just the motherboard, was well over $2,000. Okay, that's our cost to build it, and then of course it costs more. And the functionality that they had compared to what we have today is incredible. So you get increasing functionality at greater economies of scale. That's been the real benefit that we've seen, and we're going to continue to see.
Then in enterprise computing, high performance computing, one of the things that competitors out there say is that the mainframe, the large computer, is still the place where innovation is happening. It's still what is driving a lot of the major innovation. It's like a race car. All the really fancy stuff goes into the race car, and eventually in a couple of years we see that in our cars and our garages. Do you go with that as well at Intel? Because you guys aren't actually building the final computers that people are using.
So my answer to that is there's still lots of innovation at the high end. My total focus in the last 5 years has been to try to put that behind me and go with desktop types of applications, client side, let's just say. And so with the tools we have and with the team of enablers that we have who are experts in using these things, and with the large number of ISVs that have actually struggled with threading because there have been SMP machines, you know, the mini supercomputers of the 80s got lots of people's attention. And they've failed, lots of them. They've tried and they find it too hard. So there's a very ripe collection of ISVs now ready to look at these things, and for the last few years we've actually been working with lots of them. So I think what's going to be happening is innovative applications on the desktop, which software will aid.
Steve, where do you think enterprise computing, high-performance computing is going over the next 5 years? Are we going to start seeing innovations that are beyond what we can, the average techie kind of person can imagine out there, or are we on some sort of track that you can actually make a prediction
about? I think that, you know, if you plot out where high-performance computing has gone in terms of its capability, I mean, when you look at the top 500 machines in the world, most of those aren't the big capability machines to run scientific computation. A lot of them are the back center, you know, the back room types of applications just to run standard, you know, do a lot of the transactional work that David talked about. But if you look at that trend, it's been fairly steady since 1993, and I believe it's going to continue to remain that. I don't see anything that's going to get in the way of that continuing for some time. So I think the innovation will be, I can't tell you what the boutique technologies or the new technologies are going to be to maintain that trend, but the need for that performance is not going to go down. In fact, it's getting greater and greater. The amount of data that's showing up on the web is driving that in some applications, and then being able to solve extremely complex problems without having to commit huge amounts of monetary resources to do prototyping is becoming more and more critical. So as the requirements come out, we as engineers are going to get the opportunity to be creative and to be innovative and use maybe standard technologies today or new technologies coming down the line in different ways in order to be able to maintain that computing growth, because the hunger is not stopping. And I don't see it, like, and I mentioned today, I put a slide up. By the time in 2029, we're going to see, you know, upward around 10 to the 21st floating point operations per second machines that are capable of doing that. Well, I'll be 70 years old, so I don't see that trend abating anytime soon.
Video and financial, are those two of the major ones?
Video on demand is one of them, and it's a different model than some of these scientific computation models. But yeah, those will drive the need for more and more computation and more bandwidth.
Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast, David Cook, and also Steve Pawlowski from Intel, senior fellow with Intel. Also, David Cook, senior fellow, thanks for being on the podcast.
I'm a regular fellow.